So there's some translation happening at the back if you need it. So the theme of the talk, or the title of the talk this afternoon, is breaking open. This means to crack open, or to fall into so many pieces that there's nothing left. So we break open when we discover a way of living where the heart is able to embrace our deepest pain, and also to touch our deepest joy, to allow the touch of truth to flow through us. And I'm going to start with something from the text of the Buddha. It's a little complicated, so Leela is going to translate for you. I'll say it in English first, and then I'll try not to refer to the text too much, because it might be difficult to understand for some of you. So the Buddha gave this teaching to a former king. His name is Pukkusati. And the king didn't actually know that it was the Buddha who was speaking to him. But the Buddha saw, or thought, that Pukkusati was ripe for awakening. He was ready to wake up. So this is the teaching that he gave. He taught that there were four foundations on which to live one's life. The foundation of wisdom, the foundation of truth, the foundation of relinquishment, which means letting go of attachments, and finally, the foundation of peace. So these are the four foundations. And the discourse has a lot about feeling and mental conceiving, or mental formation, so the formation of ideas in the mind. And this is the pearl. This is the gem. It goes like this. The tides of conceiving do not sweep over one who stands upon these four foundations. And when the tides of conceiving no longer sweep over one, one is called a sage at peace. Now Leela is going to kindly endeavor to translate that into Hebrew.
אפשר להגיד שהגלים של הגאות, של ההיווצרות, או כן, זה כמו conceiving an idea, ליצור רעיון, לא שוטפים את מי שעומד על ארבעת היסודות האלה. וכאשר הגלים, הגאות הזאת של יצירת הרעיונות, לא שוטפים יותר את אותו אדם, אפשר לכנות אותו חכם שנמצא בשלווה.
Thank you. Yes, I will. So the four foundations are the foundation of wisdom, of truth, of relinquishment or letting go, and peace. So one of the meanings of Dharma is that which supports. And the foundations which support us are these four foundations: wisdom, truth, relinquishment, and peace. And I'm going to take them one by one. So the first of these is wisdom. Wisdom is the knowledge of the destruction of all suffering. It's to realize the end of suffering. This is wisdom. And there are two types of wisdom. There's wisdom that we accumulate through knowledge. For example, learning about the teachings. And there's wisdom which is directly penetrating, which is to directly realize and understand the Four Noble Truths. And this is the wisdom that sees the utter futility or the utter hopelessness of clinging to anything. It's the wisdom to see that clinging to something, whether it's our body, our feelings, our thoughts, our ideas, our views or opinions, brings about suffering. So wisdom that sets us free is the wisdom that emerges or arises when we see the world in a different way from the conventional way. For example, when, as I've been saying in the inquiries these last few evenings, when the sense of the constructed self, the formation of self, dissolves or falls away, there is the revealing of that which is undivided. And when we see this, there's the resolution of all of our difficulties, all pain, all sorrow, even the pain of the loss of a child. Some of you know that my little grandson, Finn, died. He died from cancer. He had a very rare form of a brain tumor. He was diagnosed when he was 5 months old, and he died when he was almost two. So he spent most of his little life suffering in pain. And he was the most beautiful little boy, and he did learn to stand and talk and say a few words before he died. And on what would have been his fourth birthday, my older grandson asked my daughter-in-law, he said, "Mummy, are you sad that today is Finn's birthday?" And she said, "No, I'm actually not sad that it's his birthday. I'm really happy to remember how he was. I'm really happy to think of how lovely he was. I'm glad that it's his birthday." So this is wisdom. This is the wisdom that comes about when we stop clinging to the way we want the world to be. So this is the wisdom we're invited to live with. When we break open to wisdom, we touch the wisdom that sets us free. And this is a very simple but beautiful example of very natural wisdom. In Australia, we have a great tradition of telling stories. In the winter, we would sit around a campfire outside and tell stories. And some of the stories are funny, some of them are touching, some of them are exaggerated. They're called tall stories. They're all different kinds of stories. So I love a story. And this story in Australia, we would think is very funny. But I'm not sure how you'll find it. But we'll give it a try. I have some friends in Australia, one a doctor and her husband, who went off to Africa to do some work there. My friend Jane was actually born in Africa, and she goes sometimes to Zambia to work as a doctor voluntarily. And when she returned, she told me this fabulous story, and it's actually a true story. And I think there's actually one or two people in the room who've heard it. Please forgive me. And it goes like this. Two Italian tourists were traveling in Africa in a game park. So a game park is the park where all the wild animals are. And they'd been to Africa rather a lot. So they'd become extremely confident about what they were doing. They were unafraid. So because of their familiarity with the place, they chose to ignore the signs that said, danger, don't go further. So there were signs on the road that said, do not drive here. But they thought, oh, we'll just keep on driving. So they did. They discovered it wasn't very wise, because very shortly the car began to sink into the mud. And it sank and it sank until the entire car body was resting in the mud. So there they were, in a part of the game park where they weren't meant to be, where nobody would look for them, no mobile phone, no mobile, and very little food and water. Speaking of water. So, all around the wild animals of Africa, lions. So there they were. They couldn't stay because they'd run out of food. And they couldn't go because they'd be eaten themselves. So what to do? So they pondered their situation. And then they came up with an ingenious idea, a clever idea. They knew that lions didn't usually bother about tents. And so they took out a tent. They pitched the tent and they climbed inside. And then they cut four holes in the bottom. Two in the front and two in the back. Then they put the legs through. So then the tent stood up and began to walk. So there they were, two people inside the tent, two legs and two legs, walking. surrounded by lions. This is walking meditation. This is the kind of mindfulness you need. So, when they sensed that the lions, they also had some a place to see, they could see out. When they sensed that the lions were coming very close, they put the tent down and just sat inside. This is sitting meditation, you got it! So there they were. The lion's breath outside. This is what the Buddha meant by mindfulness of breathing externally. And their own breath inside. So. So they would sit until the lions became disinterested and walked away. Then they would stand some more and walk. And like this, they walked for 3 days and 3 nights until they were out of the park. So, the tourists, the two Italian tourists, relied on the lion's error of perception that the tent wasn't food, that the tent couldn't be eaten. So the lions weren't bothered by the tent. They didn't realize that inside was a delicious dinner. A delicious Italian dinner, even. The gourmet Italian dinner. So you do think it's funny. Great. So in the same way, we too make errors about how we perceive reality. You see, our mental constructions, our fabrications, our ideas about ourselves, our desires, the way we see the world, our emotions and our mistaken notions of identity get in the way of reality. So what in your life veils reality? For the lions, reality was veiled by the thin fabric of the tent. So our Dharma teachings teach us that to see reality is to really see our elemental nature. And yes, to see the thoughts, to see the feelings, to know that we are perceiving, yet to know this is not me, this is not mine, this is not who I am. So through the senses, we have contact with the world. We see, hear, smell, taste, touch, and think. And then we have a feeling that arises, a pleasant and unpleasant feeling. And dependent upon that, desire pops up. We want something, or we don't want something. And desire, of course, in the Dharma is always used in connection with clinging. So the mind clings and holds to something, and then, dependent upon the clinging, is becoming. So it's the self that re-becomes when we are caught in this cycle. And this re-becoming is the cause of great trouble in the world. So penetrating wisdom is to see through or see into or see past the error of our perception. It's not to be bound by our desires, our judgments, our views, or our ideas of self or and who we are. So this is direct penetrating wisdom. Wisdom is to see reality as it has come to be. So the second foundation is the foundation of truth. So truth is that which has an undeceptive nature. It doesn't deceive us. And to see the truth of things is utterly transforming. The truth can never be mine. We can't claim it and make it ours. When we just see the flower outside in the garden, it doesn't belong to me or you. The flower simply is as it has come to be. So we can't claim truth and say, this is my truth. When we do that, we have conflict immediately. We end up with one nation saying, this is my truth, and another saying, this is my truth, and they're different. So the Buddha says, when we don't claim truth, we preserve it. We preserve truth when we don't make it ours. So sometimes, as I said before, earlier, our perceptions prevent us from seeing the truth of things. We have another story to illustrate this. In India earlier this year, our beloved manager at the retreat, Dominica, was sleeping in her bed at night. The rooms at the Bodh Gaya Monastery are very simple. A straight wooden bed with a little bit of cotton mattress and a mosquito net. That's it. I survived it. So there she was sleeping. And she woke up. All dark, and she felt something against her body. She felt something long and round and quite fat, she thought. And of course she thought, something's in my bed. And the mind went to, it's a snake, right? It's a snake. So she moved away. It's wisdom. But the snake followed her. Or the perception of snake was still there. So she turned on the light. And there she saw that what she was afraid of was her own arm. She had been sleeping on her arm, and it had gone totally numb. So she couldn't feel her arm, but she could feel her body and the numb arm against it. And the mind went, it's a snake. Okay, so this is an example of perception. So perception distorts reality. Not the truth of things. It was just her arm. So in our practice, we have to see that we often distort reality. Our perceptions veil reality, just like the tent did for the lions. So we have to start to see our constructs of mind. And now I want to tell another story to illustrate the touch of truth and how the touch of truth, in its simplicity, can free us. Sometimes it's actually the most painful events in our life that set us free. It's when something is terribly painful that we seem to have no choice but to break open. So I want to tell you about the very saddest moment, I think, of my entire life. I was at the funeral of my grandson. And I guess it's one thing for me to lose my grandson, because he was so gorgeous, so beautiful. But another, to see my own son suffer the loss, to see my daughter-in-law and my son in such pain, and my other children. So it was a very painful day. So I think the saddest moment was when I saw Chris, my son, who's actually called after Christopher, I saw Chris holding his dead child and wrapping him in silk. They wrapped him in silk and covered his face for the very last time, and put him in a beautiful coffin that their friends had made. It was a beautiful handmade wooden coffin, and a glassmaker had made some beautiful glass beads that were all set in it. And his mother had sewed a beautiful silk lining. And so his little body was placed inside the coffin. And then the lid put on. And then I almost cried to think of the moment. My daughter-in-law just cried that cry that you hear when a mother loses a son. And I know that you understand it here, because the loss is incredible, it's huge. Nothing can bring back the child. So we were all weeping, and then of course we stood at the crematorium where the body was to be burnt, and the little coffin went into the fire. And then as we gathered outside, my son turned back and looked at the crematorium with its chimney stack, and we could see the heat and the little particles going up into the sky. So the heat waved like this above the chimney stack, and then all trace of the small particles or the heat was gone. And then my son said something extraordinary. It was really so simple, yet it was the truth. He said, "Look, Mum, look, there goes my Finny boy." He called him Finny boy. He said, "There goes my Finny boy." So the form was moving to the formless, the visible to the invisible. And even though it wasn't what we wanted, it was exactly what we didn't want. The act of being with the process, just the very truth of that, was comforting. So we all stood and just watched that very natural process of form moving to formlessness. So this is the touch of truth. And when truth just touches us, it comforts, it releases. Because in the very moment of being with even the most painful of situations, the heart breaks open. The heart breaks open to that which is bigger than all of us. So this is to live with the foundation of truth. To live with the reality of birth and death. Yet to know that when the heart breaks open, there is that which is greater than birth and death. There's the love that is untouched by birth and death. The love for Finn, for all of us, doesn't change because he has died. So the heart breaks open to that which is greater than birth and death. So this is to live with the foundation of truth. And this is what the teachings point to. So the next of the foundations is the foundation of the relinquishment or the giving up of all attachments. As if that last one wasn't enough. We're talking about the giving up of all attachments. Everything. For the end of all ideas we have. The end of all of our thinking that we're right and we know what's best and other people don't. You know the same old story. You must have noticed these last few days. You must have had the odd thought like that. So if you can remember one thing about this entire week, please remember that the teachings are about liberation through non-clinging. Liberation through not clinging to anything. At Christmas time in Australia, it's a kind of national holiday time. And so my whole family, extended family, kind of from me and children down, relatives and ex-partners and former father-in-laws and so on, fathers-in-law, shall I say, all get together. So we are quite an extended bunch. In fact, there were 38 of us all together. And we plan to spend a week having Christmas together. As I said, we're not particularly Christian or religious. We're a very secular society in Australia. But it is a holiday time and there's the tradition of gift giving. So at Christmas we give someone a gift and we generally spend time with our family. And party on. So, this Christmas we'd planned to camp in tents, plus we had a house in a very remote location by the ocean at the end of a dirt road where no one else ever goes. And the idea was to spend that week just in the wild with trees and nature and ocean. And this is what we love to do in Australia. We love the fact that the landscape is wild. And so there we were. And it poured with rain. It poured with rain and a river swept through all of the tents. So in the end, we all ended up in this house together, all 38. And somehow we managed to all fit, all find a bit of floor to sleep on. And we had the most extraordinary week, eating, laughing, sharing, cooking, and doing really simple things together. It was beautiful. On Christmas Day itself, there's a tradition of present giving. Now, I buy presents for my children, but not for the whole 38, for obvious reasons. But we play a game. And the game is that everybody brings one present. And we put the presents in the middle and all sit in a circle. And the game is that you can choose a present. They're wrapped up, so you can't see what they are. You can choose a present from the middle, or you can actually take somebody else's present. Okay. So even though it's a game and we all know it's a game, when we open something that we like, the mind goes, I want this. I want to keep this, and I hope no one else notices that I'm sitting here and I've got this present that I actually really like. And I don't want somebody else to take it from me. And then, of course, in humour and good spirit and lightheartedness, of course, there's playfulness, and generally there's four or five presents that everybody wants. And then there's some deliberately, absolutely terrible presents that no one would ever want. And this dance of wanting and having to give up what it is that you want, having to let go of your present when somebody says, I would like that, thank you, is such a really interesting thing. Because even though we know it's not important, the mind just fixes upon liking it or not liking it. If you've got something terrible that you'd never use in 100 years, you just think, oh, please, somebody, take this horrible present from me. I can't live with it. I don't want it in the house, and so on. So there's all these stories that go on about it. And there was this one present that nobody wanted. It was a present for children. I don't know if you have them in Israel, but it's a rubber kind of balloon thing. And you put it under somebody's cushion. And when you sit on it, it makes a farting sound. And children, especially young boys, I've got three sons, really think these things are funny. Okay? So this was one of the presents. And none of the adults wanted it, right? It was the present that nobody in the room wanted. And so right at the very end, the youngest person there is my granddaughter. So she was five at the time. So we orchestrated it just so that she could choose any present that she liked, so that she could go last, and then she had the choice of the whole room. Guess what? We said, you can choose, her mother whispered in her ear, you can have anything. You can have anything you want, any present, anything you want. And she ran and grabbed the whoopee cushion. So there you go. What one person wants, another person doesn't. And this movement of mind is incredible. And we all laughed so loudly when we saw it that she thought she burst into tears because she thought she'd done something wrong. Because there was thunderous laughter. But the beauty of the game was that I looked around the room. And that day we had some visitors, so I think I counted 42 people. We could have a retreat by ourselves, our families. There were 42 people, and everybody was full of joy. So the fact that we didn't have to hang on to the present, that we could just give up the present, or any serious thoughts about having something, brought incredible joy. So there was friendship, joy, laughter, and something rather precious about letting go, about giving up, holding on to what it is we want. And this is how it is in our daily life. When we let go, when we give up clinging, we give up holding on to what we want, no matter how silly it is or how serious it is, there's a freedom and a lightness and a joy and a delight. It just comes all by itself. So this is to break open to the freedom of non-clinging. So now we come to the fourth of the foundations, and that's the foundation of peace. So what does it really mean for us to live with peace? Someone here actually told me, Radha, if you talk about peace in Israel, you'll be a troublemaker, but I'm taking the risk. It's in the sutta. So most of us find it really difficult to live with ourselves in peace, let alone with anybody else, let alone with our partners or our families or our friends or our relatives, especially our relatives, or our neighbours. So to live with peace is actually the pacification or making peace with. Pacification means to make peaceful. The pacification of greed and hatred and delusion. These three things, greed, hatred and delusion, are what the Buddha called the three poisons of the mind. They're the three things that make us feel so miserable, that bring harm to ourselves and to others. So our liberation and our freedom is found in the exhaustion of greed, hatred, and delusion. And the Buddha called this the supreme noble peace. He said that the highest happiness is to live with a heart of peace. And I think that's rather beautiful. So coming back to the sutta that I was talking about initially, it says in the sutta, by overcoming all conceivings, one is called a sage at peace. So to think I am is a conceiving. To think I am this is a conceiving. To think I am not is a conceiving. To think I am not this is also a conceiving. To think I shall be something or other is a conceiving. And to think I shall not be is also a conceiving. And then he goes on to say, if we think I shall be possessed of form, that is also a conceiving. Or if we say, I shall be formless, that is also a conceiving. And the sutta goes on, and the sage at peace. So, when we no longer conceive, or we are no longer bound to our conceivings, is more correct. So when we no longer really believe I am, so we no longer really believe or take seriously the substantial nature of self, that's the end of conceiving I am. In Asia, they say the sense of I is like a line drawn on water. So we might, in a conventional sense, say, I'm going to have a cup of tea. No problem. The I arises. The tea is there. No problem. So long as I don't take myself terribly seriously, the I arises and ceases, and is just like a line drawn on water. So when we no longer cling to our conceivings, we are set free. When we no longer cling anywhere, we touch the heart of peace. And the sutta goes on, and the sage at peace is not born, does not age, does not die, is not shaken and is not agitated. For there is nothing present in her, nothing present in him, by which he or she might be born. So this is the end of becoming. So when we rest in the foundations of wisdom, of truth, of relinquishment, and of peace, we get a sense of the liberation that is possible, the freedom that is possible. When we really do that, we begin to break open. We break open to a life of receptivity. We break open to a life where we really meet every experience. We break open to a life of intimacy. We break open to a mind that's no longer bound up with what it thinks. We break open to the nakedness of mind, to the mind that is naked. We let go of the burden of the past. We break open to a place that is unshatterable. We break open to that which cannot be broken. And when we break open, we're touched by truth. When we break open, we live with wisdom. When we break open, we really let go. May all beings live with wisdom. May all beings be touched by truth. Beings live with a heart and mind that doesn't cling anywhere. And may all beings realize and live with a peaceful heart.